So when Jesus speaks, what does he sound like? That's the question that popped up in my head when I read Jesus' response to Philip today. This scene takes place in the middle of John's version of the Last Supper. Jesus just washed the disciples' feet, shared that he will be betrayed, and told his friends that he won't be here much longer. And it seems that warning finally gets through to the disciples. Now, these men and women gave up everything to follow Jesus. They left their homes, their families, and their careers. They thought Jesus would start a new era with a revolution that would make Jerusalem great again and would toss the occupying Roman army into the sea. But Jesus' words during the Last Supper point to something different. The future suddenly looks a lot less certain. I imagine something inside Philip, something in there just broke. He immediately recalled everything Jesus said about dying, all those words that pointed to the cross, and his mind raced. Without a sense of what's going to happen next, Philip is suddenly anxious. So he turns to Jesus and asks for a sign from God. For something, for anything that'll show that everything he believes is going to actually happen. And that, in the end, everything is going to be okay. And this is where Jesus' tone matters. When he responds and says, "Have I been with you all this time, Philip, and you still do not know me?" Do we imagine Jesus sounding patient, kind, maybe speaking in a whisper? Or do we hear Jesus sounding totally exacerbated, like when our kids or our loved ones open a fridge that is full of food, look, and say there's nothing to eat? Like, seriously, Philip, where have you been? That's the tone. That's the Jesus I hear in our gospel reading today. Philip has been there since nearly the beginning. He's taken trips with Jesus, slept under the stars with Jesus, and shared meals all over Israel and beyond. Philip has seen the miracles, seen Jesus do what Jesus does. Philip has literally seen the signs. And even that's not enough to extinguish his anxiety and his worry about the future. When Philip walked with Jesus, he carried an expectation of who Jesus is and what's going to happen next. But if Jesus isn't going to start a revolution, and with his betrayal and death on the horizon, Philip, in many ways, is undone. His expectations are broken. He pleads to Jesus for another sign, another miracle, to put Philip's broken expectations back together again. Philip is emotional with Jesus, and Jesus is emotional right back. He tells Philip to remember. Remember what he's seen. Remember who he belongs to. Remember what Jesus has taught. And then Jesus says, "Know what you can do." Philip can't control what the future will bring, but there is something he can do now. He can remember. He can believe. He can love. And Philip can trust that Jesus will be with him, no matter what. The problem with the future is that we just don't know it. Our expectations of what's going to happen next isn't the guarantee we wish it was. Life is full of too many variables, and our anxiety about tomorrow is just always there. I remember as a kid in school spending long nights staring at the ceiling, too anxious to go to sleep because I wasn't sure about the questions that would be asked on tomorrow's test, or if that person I liked would actually say yes when I asked them to the prom. I couldn't decide what my teachers would put on the test, and I couldn't decide if my future date was even available or if they even liked me. But I could do something about me. I could make sure I studied and covered all the material that was assigned, and I could do the hard work to be the kind and caring person that even I would like. So by admitting what we can't control about tomorrow and focusing on where we've come and what we can do now, that's Jesus' answer to Philip. Remember hope and love. That's Jesus' message. But Jesus doesn't leave things there. He doesn't tell Philip that this process of looking at the future and looking at today will be something he has to do on his own. Jesus promises an ally, an advocate, a divine presence that Jesus will give his disciples and who will keep God's promises always in front of them. And that's the Spirit. That presence is God's commitment to us, saying we're not going through this thing called life on our own. And that's what we're celebrating today. We might not know what's going to happen, but we do know that in our past and in our presence and in our future, we've got God and God's got us. Faith and love, caring for others and for ourselves, is not something God leaves us to do on our own. Because sometimes we need a flaming tongue of fire to ignite our call to love. Sometimes we need to have others around us who suddenly can speak our language. And sometimes the only sign we get is a memory, a promise that we were baptized, that we were kissed by the water and kissed by God, and that's all we need to share Christ's light in this world. Philip walked with Jesus, ate with Jesus, and saw all that Jesus can do. And even he needed the Spirit. The Spirit's holy gift is that we are God's and God isn't leaving us on our own. That's God's promise. That's what God's peace looks like. And that's the confidence we need to live as the people of God. When we don't know what tomorrow will bring, the Spirit grabs us to remember our roots, remember where we come from, and remember that God will go to any length, even to death on a cross, for us and for the world. And it's with this gift, with this Spirit, we can hear Jesus' words, listen to his voice, and do what he asks. And that's in everything. Just love. Amen.